Welcome to the India FinTech Diaries, the only podcast focused exclusively on the Indian FinTech market. I'm Elroy.
And I'm Hemant. In each episode, we dive into the latest trends, ideas, innovations, business models, and personalities that are shaping India's FinTech landscape.
We also invite amazing guests who are innovators and industry players that are driving the change that is helping make financial services more modern, innovative, and inclusive in India. Come join us as we explore the changing landscape of FinTech in India. Welcome to India FinTech Diaries, the show for all things Indian FinTech. I'm your host, Elroy.
And I'm your host, Hemant. Generative AI, or Gen AI, introduces a blend of opportunities and challenges within the financial services sector. In today's episode, we explore the diverse effects Gen AI is set to have on regulatory compliance in financial services. To help us understand this complex landscape, we have with us Ankit Ratan, co-founder of SignZ. Welcome to the show, Ankit.
Hey, hi Hemant, hi Elroy. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Ankit, before we start delving into this very complex topic, we wanted to kick things off by maybe doing a quick introduction about yourself and the story behind the creation of SignZ.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll just try and wrap it up quickly and not bore your listeners.
I am very sure they would be very interested in it, not get bored with it.
I have that same, boring history where, you went to IIT, passed out of college, joined a consulting job, no surprises there. But I think after 1 year is when things started to change for me. I was super bored. I was having an exciting life. I was 3-4 months in Shanghai. I was in US. I was in India. We were solving tough problems. We were doing credit card fraud, data analytics of how to sell to banks, etc. So work was good. I think my life was good, but I was just completely bored. Like it was a very different experience for me. And I think that is when I truly started to ask myself, what is that I want to do in life and what is the meaning of life? And I think one thing led to another. I tried multiple things. Eventually, three of my friends were starting a company and I thought, I have nothing better to think of, so let me just join them. So that is how my first experience with entrepreneurship happened. 2 years after job, we started a company in data analytics. And I think while that company did not succeed, we ran it for 2 years. We were profitable. We actually had great customers, but it did not succeed because I think we were not in the right direction and we were not able to really build product. It became a services company. But as an individual, I truly enjoyed entrepreneurship. Like I for the first time truly felt this is where I should be. This is what I should be doing. And I often tell this to people that, even if I have to leave everything and open a shop, I would rather open a shop than go back and join consulting. So for me, that kind of defined my calling. And I think since then, I have been very clear that I want to build things. My WhatsApp status is also building. So that is my calling. That is what I am. I see myself as a creator/builder. And I think over the last 9 years, we have built SignZ into a company which helps banking and financial services automate and digitize their consumer journeys and bring intelligence in form of what people are today calling AI, but in terms of technology and data, so that your end consumer doesn't have to fail a lot of things, you don't have to face a lot of fraud, and both of you don't have to wait for 3-4 weeks before really starting the journey as a consumer. So you can, in very few clicks, very few data, in within minutes, become a customer, get an account, get a credit card, get a loan, and also have low fraud because of the power of technology and power of data. Yeah, so that's my short intro.
Yeah, I'm very sure the people did not get bored. And that's a very interesting story. This brings to my mind 2 points. One, as a consultant for 10, 12 years, ouch. And
yeah, sorry for that, guys. I didn't do that.
No, that's okay. And second is, I remember taking you guys to Indian Life Insurers about 8 years back. This is the leading general insurer in the country. And then, even then, I was really impressed by the passion that you guys had for problem solving this problem of onboarding, which persisted, but no one knew how easy or how it could be solved in an easy manner, which is seamless. So great, great work that you guys have done on that end. Now, since we've gone beyond that, shifting gears to the main topic for the today, and let's start with the brighter side first. Now, you yourself, Ankit, and you have also seen financial services harnessing generative AI to boost the effectiveness and efficiency of their regulatory compliance process and other processes as well. So it would be great if you could talk about how they are doing it, bring this to life with some use cases that you've seen.
Yeah, I think if it is okay, probably I would also want to just define the word, because I think it is important, especially in these times when for both job seekers, for practitioners, and for people who are trying to sell it, to really understand what's going on. So I think let's just break down that word, right? So I think the first word is generative and the second word is artificial intelligence. And I think first, let's just tackle the key word, which is intelligence, right? Like if I was to remove intelligence, then it is generative artificial, which of course nobody wants, right? So, so all of us want intelligence, which is the core of the theme. So I think when we talk about intelligence in general and we talk about, let's say, less intelligent human beings, what are the key differentiators, right? So it is super interesting to do this exercise, because both of you can see things, both of you can hear things, both of you can speak things, both of you can grip things in the right way, both of you have sense of movement. I think on a lot of the things which define you as moving animals, moving human beings, you are actually the same. There's no intelligence there. Intelligence comes with what I think are three key aspects. One is memory, that maybe you have memorized more things, you know more things.
Right.
Your ability to do computation, which means your ability to draw logical conclusions, do additive logics, do rational logics, etc. And your ability to be creative or think out of the box. And if I was to just stick to one and two, right, which is memory and computation logic, actually computers have been better than human beings for almost 25 years. I think some of you maybe remember that forecasting, as an example, has been done by computers for 20, 25 years now. And before computers took it, we used to do it using calculators and sometimes even pure maths. So if I was to argue, I would say that computation logic, which is actually seen as the most intelligent thing, has been done by computers for a long time. Memory has been done for the computers by a long time. I think it is the third part, creativity, which I think is the aspect which probably computers are not good at, or is something that humans have always believed that we are creative. This is our key strength. And I think what generative AI is doing is that by allowing people to write blogs, create videos, create music, create movies, I think it is kind of breaking that. It is kind of saying that, we can be creative as computers. And I think that is really changing the game. And what is less understood is that problems which are not intelligent problems, like vision, right? It is these problems which have been hard for computers. Even today, I would argue that computers are not as good at vision as human beings are. Like even today, if you will show a human being a picture of an animal, and of course, not relying on the fact that they have bad memory, but just the fact that if you show them a cat, they will be able to figure out a cat much better than a computer can. So on physical vision problems, computers are still bad. So on the things that all dumb humans are good at, computers are still very bad at it compared to human beings. So I feel that the Gen AI trend then can just be encapsulated in some ways in creativity. Creativity is the key part of that trend. And then we need to go a little bit step further and say, okay, what is creativity? And I think there we don't have a great answer, but at least my answer is that creativity is the ability to look at a lot of data which is not structured, which doesn't have these clear logical Q&A, like, show me red ball. So you have a data with all the balls and there's a tag of red. that is structured data. You can use logic, you can use computation to answer that question. But let's assume there's a set of balls and there's no tagging against those balls. But you have looked at red objects before in your life. So you have some sense of what is red, and when you look at balls, you are able to say these are red balls. So that is, I think, creativity, where you are able to use patterns from some other data and apply on some other data. And of course, even that computers were doing, but I think that field, which is, you can think of that field as the field which started from our humble data modeling, then was called analytics, you know, then was called AI, and probably today is called Gen AI. And of course, the models have changed. You started the humble linear regression, then you went into your more advanced random forest, those kind of things. And then you went into, you know, our current set of deep learning models. And then, of course, today's LLM models. So the underlying infra has changed. But I think that the key aspect of human intelligence, which I think is being really worked upon, is creativity. And I think once this part is being solved for, I think, is when the intelligence is sort of complete and computers can then compete with human beings. So that's my sort of definition, that on the basic physical things, computers are still not very good. And on the intelligent things, I think they have become very, very good. And they are smarter than 99% of human race as of today.
Ankit, that's a very unique way to look at generative AI. We just also wanted to understand, based on your experience, how are you seeing the shape up as far as financial services is concerned?
Yeah, I think, again, great question, right? So, given both of you have exposure to banking, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to you have exposure to banking, I think if you think about banking, right, banking is in some ways more a left brain problem, which means that it is a rational, rule-based world, right? So,
correct.
I would argue that even before Gen AI, just the memory and computation part of computing was creating inroads, and there are a lot of data to kind of validate that. That lot of back office has actually got replaced over time. Core banking took over, you know, your ledger, your physical ledgers. After that,
yeah,
lot of data modeling took over actuaries. It took over a lot of risk underwriters, etc. And I think we are to the point that most of the intelligent things in banking already have a solution. Whether that solution is inside the bank or not can have reasons, but there is a solution. Actually, it is the dumb part which probably is getting changed now, right? So when people submit you physical documents, you have to look at them. So you have to see if they are fraud. You have to see if this is truly the ID that the customer is claiming in his form.
Correct.
And it is this dumb part, actually, which is not still digitized or still not well digitized. So in some ways, even though I'm going against the trend of what everyone is claiming, I think the traditional AI or the traditional AI wave actually has been working on these problems. I don't think Gen AI has a great insight or sudden wave causing for at least some of these banking problems. I think just the fact that AI was on its march, and I remember when we started the company 12 years ago, if I was to use just a random metric, computer vision was 70% good at IDs compared to human beings. Today, at least we see it's almost 99.5% good. So, of course, that march has been on, but I don't think Gen AI is a deep impact creator for the backend compliance parts of the banking. Where I think it is going to create huge impact is on the front-end aspects of banking.
Yep.
And again, I like breaking down things into the theoretical construct. So if I was to think about Indian banking and put it into two large buckets on the front end, and I'm not saying that there are just two large buckets, but I think for simplicity's sake, if I put it into two large buckets, there is one sort of consumer who knows what they want.
Okay.
And so, for example, I want Axis Magnus card. Why? Because my friend has it. I've read about it. It is the best card, etc., etc., etc. And I'm very clear I want Axis Magnus. And then I go to either my branch, I call my RM, or I go to the website, or I, you know, hit the chatbot. In all of these problems, actually, if the bank has to use Gen AI, it means they've got something wrong. Because the consumer exactly knows what he wants. Like, I mean, how hard it can be to say, I want Axis Magnus, and to give him Axis Magnus. It's not hard at all. So I think at least in the consumers who really know what they want, there is no need of GenAI, there is no need of AI, to be honest. In fact, because you have created bad processes, you have to put GenAI, because there is a person who needs to talk to somebody, you're saying, can I replace this person with a chatbot? But why should there have been a person in the right. first place? There should have been nobody. This guy should have actually been able to just choose access. He knows he needs a credit card. He knows he needs a premium credit card. He should have just been able to choose it. It's how hard can that be? So I think one is this part. The other consumer set is interesting consumer. It's the consumer who is not financially aware, is not in the same space as somebody who's very, very knowledgeable. They do their daily work. They earn some money. And it should be the job of banking in general to help these people make most of their money and secure their futures for themselves and for their families. And I think it is this consumer where GenAI can have a huge impact. What I am disappointed with, I think, is at least I think in the Indian context, because we work in US as well, I feel in the Indian context, our banking has not gone in this direction.
Okay.
We have tried to make branches distribution online efficient, right? We have just tried to solve problem number one, which is that you want a loan, I'll give you a loan. We have not tried to actually ask the other question, which is, should you need a loan? Actually, do you need a loan? And even if you have not come to me to ask for a loan, can I sit with you and help you actually make most of your money? Can I help you invest in the right place? Can I kind of show you that actually you have a lot of money in FD and you are trying to buy this car from a car loan? Why don't you do a FD loan on FD? So I think we have not done a great job of financial advice, right? And true financial advice. And simple reason is because it was expensive. It's very expensive to have a financial advisor advising a customer on whom, as a bank, maybe you'll make 1,000 rupees a year. You cannot afford to have a financial advisor.
Right.
And this is the aspect where I think GenAI can completely change the game. You can now give an intelligent financial advisor to each and every one of your customers. You can change the landscape of banking. You can change how you deal with your customers. You can use their data and data on good financial advice, and then use the creative part of GenAI to give them great options. And I think that is where the maximum impact is going to be caused by GenAI. And on the compliance, on the backend part, I think the normal AI, like, because we have to differentiate between a trend and between what was happening. I think the normal AI will continue to keep its march, and I think the automation AI will continue to kind of clean up the backend, which it has been doing, and I think it will continue.
Ankit, those are some very interesting points. And I think, as you rightly pointed out, there are different aspects where generative AI and traditional AI will continue to be useful as far as banking is concerned. But if you look at traditionally, largely investments around AI have been largely done on the banking side of things and not so much on the regulator or other compliance side of things. So just shifting the lens a little from the lens of a regulator, what do you think are some of the potentials for embedding either generative AI or normal AI processes within supervisory technology? And what are some of the key advantages this could bring to both the regulator as well as the industry as a whole?
Yeah, I think actually even in compliance, right? While again, I put a very broad brush saying there is no GenAI in compliance, but I think which is not true, right? So I think in both compliance and supervisory, or let's say that supervisory part of compliance, there is a role to be played, because again, if you take that example of financial advisor, you cannot have a financial advisor looking at every customer. Similarly, you cannot have a compliance trained person looking at every transaction in your bank, at every customer transaction, at every relation transaction between a sales rep and a customer. It's not possible. But with GenAI, it's possible. It's possible to be a silent listener to all transactions, to all email chains, to all interactions between an RM and a customer, and check them for, of course, bad customer experience, but check them for non-compliance also, and check them for sources of fraud. And similarly, hence for the regulator, even today, right? Like when we go and talk to regulators, their biggest issue is that we cannot look at everything. And so we have to go and do these sample checks. But with GenAI, you can have AI bot, which is basically a supervisory bot looking at almost everything sitting on the system of the bank, and then throwing up signals in a report, which then plays this part of ever-present regulator across each and every transaction in the bank. And I do think that is the future of supervisory tech, both for the regulator, both for inside supervisory, where you can have an intelligent compliance bot looking at everything inside the bank.
That's very, very promising, Ankit. Ankit, however, I have seen that whenever a new tool comes in, because finally AI or Gen AI is a tool in with the financial services firm, it's not always sunshine and rainbows. There is always some problems that come up with the tool. I remember when we started with eKYC and this picture was to be scanned, people started, instead of a person, a picture used to be put. Then I think you and other people who were working in this space cracked the problem by saying liveliness check. So there has to be a real person in front of it. The person has to blink their eyes to make sure that it's an actual person doing it, because people were generating KYCs on dead people and loans were being issued to dead, right? So do you think, considering now Gen AI has come with this unique capability of maybe even generating, say, videos which looks like a live person, I'm just extending myself on this, I know. So is there a chance of fraudster wielding this new tool to sidestep compliance measures that are already in place? Can that happen? And if yes, what do you think the industry and the regulators do to brace for these new challenges?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. It's also a controversial question, because, you know, we are supposed to be the guardians. I can't come on and say that, you know, that there is a nuclear weapon which can destroy us, and, you know, we are just sitting ducks. So, right. But you're right. I mean, in theory, the technology is good enough to fool any liveliness check in the world, right? And whoever can claim whatever they can claim. But I mean, those are just like, you know, holding at the straws and trying to say this is not possible, that is not possible. But the truth is, it is possible, right? We have seen deepfake videos. There's no way you can differentiate between somebody's deepfake video and that real person. There's no way. They look exactly the same. So I think from that point of view, and we have seen frauds where some CEO video has gone to an employee and that employee has transferred millions of dollars to that account. So, I mean, to claim that, you know, your liveliness check can somehow prevent that, I think makes no sense. A live human being transferred millions of dollars to somebody because they saw a deepfake video. So, I mean, it's nonsensical to claim that. So, I think there is a nuclear weapon out there, like to your question. But like nuclear weapon, everyone cannot afford to build nuclear weapons. Everyone cannot afford to deploy nuclear weapons, cannot have the team to run the nuclear weapons. And I think for that reason, at least for now, they will be used in these million-dollar frauds, because the cost of running these frauds will be high enough to not do them in small things. But as these things get democratized, and if they get democratized, then yes, then we truly may have to relook or rethink of some of these processes.
Yeah, and crack the problem.
Yeah, and crack the problem. And I think I've of course used very theoretical concepts, but even in security, I think again going back to the to very theoretical constructs, I think security has always been about three factors, right? Who you are, what you know.
Correct.
And in those things, the who you are and what you have part have always, actually all three parts have been frauded in multiple ways. But I think the part which AI can really do fast is who you are, right? Like the deepfake video, that it can generate biometrics, it can generate face, iris on a video, etc. So of course, videos are no longer safe. I would also argue that with technology advent, and there have been frauds in India where people have created fake biometrics just by having some person's iPhone photo of their finger, created a biometric which actually has frauded a fingerprint biometric. So I would argue that who you are, I think, is something that will always get broken by technology at some point or the other. And what you have, I think, is a very costly problem. Like if you go back and tell people, no, you have to have a token and that token will have something and that is how you log in every time, I think it is not possible in a digital world. So I think we come back to, I think, the oldest security hack, which is what you know, right? So if you if you see films which are positioned in 4000 BC, and there's this guy who comes at a door in some, you know, night, and he says, you know, tell me the secret password. And that guy tells you something, right? So even centuries back, right, secret has been the way to secure things. And I think sometimes processes or technologies that last so much, I think, have to become the technologies that will last another way. Then I feel secret is clearly the one that GenAI cannot do anything about. Yes, I can fish it out of you. I can act like the CEO and get the secret from you. But secret in itself, I think, cannot be broken. Or our humble password in itself cannot be broken as easily, to be honest.
Ankit, I think you mentioned an interesting point about probably the secret being the only last defense that you probably have against generative AI. But I think to some extent, even that is in some kind of a danger of being compromised, because the way we put our lives today on social media, completely online, right? And pretty much all our thoughts, etc., also they're online on social media. It makes it very simple for fraudsters to maybe programmatically or kind of scrape that entire set of information and maybe even crack the secret problem. So any thoughts on how that might evolve as well?
Yeah, I mean, I had once put a status, which I think is reflective. I can talk about it right now. I'm married, I have two kids. But the status I put was that a refuted love is the best secret password. Like the a love that has been refuted has the highest value in the world, because it is a great secret password. Because you don't put it on social media that, you know, this is the girl who rejected me, and you don't put it out everywhere, right? So your kids and wife, everyone knows every birthday, and I mean, that those are your secrets, then a generative AI can definitely crack those secrets. But yeah, I think on a lighter note, yeah, the secrets have to be things that people don't know and cannot be generated. And I think you're right that while I say humble password, but the way people do passwords, right? Like there was a study, and even in our own company, we did this study, and like 95% of passwords are like name plus plus, name DOB, you know, all those kind of passwords. So I agree with you that maybe humble password is not the thing. I think we should just call it what it is, you know, that you have to have fallen in love and not got the girl to give you attention or boy to give you attention. And I think that should be your secret.
Before going to the next question, I just missed one point, Ankit, when you were talking about this advisory. The interesting part is actually now I have seen some Indian banks experimenting of saying, see, the place where advisory is done by a person itself, as you said, is very, very expensive, right? The place where the advisory is very generic is not very beneficial to someone. And because it is India, you want that there is a person advising you rather than an algorithm, even if the algorithm is better. What I've seen is advisors who are being assisted by generative AI to give them recommendations so that they don't have to do analysis, expanding the number of customers that they could serve from, say, 20 to, say, 60, 70, 80 per advisor. And that seemed like an interesting experiment being done right now, so that even mass affluent people also get some quality advice and not limited to just affluents and HNIs. And earlier, it was just limited to private banking customers, right? So that's an interesting thing that at least I have started seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you that there is an increasing view that advice is not only limited to HNI wealth. So that, till that part, I agree with you. I'm not sure about the way they're trying to go about it. But yes, I agree with the fact that they've understood that there are these people who put 30 lakhs rupees in FD. I will make more money from that than from advising HNI wealth guy. So, you know, that's so stupid of me to not talk to these people.
Correct.
But yeah.
Correct. And the other thing is, because the demographics of India is changing, our size of this mass affluent people who are cannot be called HNIs, but also cannot be called middle class or lower middle class, is going to go up by significant proportions. And if you don't serve them, it will be becoming very difficult for banks to do business if those are ignored, right? Because they are not, say, poor. They are just not HNIs, but they are rich enough.
Yeah, but I mean, I many times argue with the banks that you have everything to win against challenger banks. And it has nothing to do with your app. Like, I mean, I still use Axis Bank app, and the app is not the issue. I think your app is good. Like, there's no problem with any bank's app. Like, I'm okay. Like, it may fail, all of that, I'm fine. I don't think those are the problems. I think the real problem is what you are saying, which is that there is a class which wants advice. It is not HNI, but it is affluent, and it wants advice. It wants you to engage. And I think changing that, right, changing that structure, I think is the key. It is going to be the key moment for banks, not technology, not your front-end UI versus a neobank, but just the fact that that neobank is very clear that I am focused on this class of people who's, you know, this rising middle class affluent, and I will do everything for them. I think that's
And this is like the absolutely simple problem to solve. I'll give you an example, Ankit. When I started working 15 years back, I opened my first salary account in one of the top two private banks in the country. Since then, my salary, annual salary, would have gone up by, say, 20x, example, right? But the bank has not reached out to me saying that these are some additional services or I'm moving you to this category, and it has not. I still have my account with them. I still maintain, of course, a slightly higher proportion of my amount with them, but they have zero idea. No wealth reach out to me.
Absolutely. So,
I am completely aligned with you on this one, that these are the simpler and very clear problems that need to be solved rather than going to very complicated and cutting edge UI problem that I think a lot of people are going behind now to compete with challengers. So Ankit, I think we are living in very, very interesting times, new challenges, new promises. What I've also seen is, because we work with financial services organization and there are like multiple regulatory compliances that they have to align with, when they start using generative AI for things which are as simple as, for example, auto generation of marketing content, right, or making next best product suggestion based on first party and third party data which they've aggregated, it might result in some compliance or regulatory issues, especially since we will also have, or in some form, DPDP or the Data Privacy Act has already gone on floor. So in your opinion, when companies start implementing AI, traditional AI or Gen AI in their organization, how could they make sure, the financial services organization, that they navigate these complex regulatory waters carefully?
Yeah, I think that's, again, a great question. And I think it goes to, again, our discussion on the nature of generative AI. So I think there's also a belief somehow that generative AI means that somehow it is the word of expert. But I think the right way to think about it is that it is a word of a newbie. And why I say that is that even when you and I are chatting, right, we can miscommunicate. I can misunderstand your question. I can say something that you are not looking for. I can also misinform. I understand your question, but I am not an expert. I am not the right person. I'll give you an example. So, for example, miscommunication is that you ask me, you know, where should I invest? And what I really wanted to know is that where should I invest my money in stocks or etc. And I thought that you're talking about investing in art and real estate and football. And I can give you an answer,
correct,
which is miscommunication. I did not understand your question, or you did not put your question correctly, and I miscommunicated as a generative AI. Misinformation is that you asked me that, you know, hey, I have only this much money and I want to make good returns. I'm a middle class guy and I have made my first 5 lakhs and I really want to invest in a way that I grow and tomorrow I can buy a house. And I have all this data as generative AI, and I say that, you know, the highest returns have been made on this crypto asset. I can see all the data. And so I say, you should put all your 5 lakhs in this crypto asset. And that is misinformation, which means that it's not that my intention was to tell you something wrong, but given the data I had and the limited capacity I had to understand your context, I gave you something which is actually very wrong for you. And both things will happen in generative AI, because like human beings, they will misinform, they will miscommunicate. And so to your question, there will be chances where they will not follow something, they will miss a law, because unlike deterministic systems which run on rational rules and logic, generative AI is that creative part of your brain which will go out of the box. In fact, there's a recent paper where they have demonstrated the jailbreak of Gemini, which Google claimed as, you know, we have, because after their fiasco, right, Google claimed that now we have a model which we have done a really good job of, and this will not hallucinate and this will not do this, blah blah blah. And there's a recent paper where some academic has done jailbreak and of the GenAI, and it will always happen. It will always happen because what we are trying to do is when we are trying to create an architecture around a GenAI content, we are trying to then put rational logics on top of creative content. And we are trying to put, let's say, 200 rules to say that, okay, if you see a word which is somebody's name, if you see a word which is somebody's DOP, if you see a word which is abusive, okay, this is the dictionary of what is abusive, etc., 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 then please don't allow it, right? So you're trying to put these rules and somebody will come and they will ask a question which is actually a 101st rule which you have not written, and it will allow a jailbreak, or they will ask the same question in a way that it is not no longer deterministic, but the GenAI understands it because it is not on deterministic. For example, let's say you've written a rule which only classifies English abuses, and so somebody tries to jailbreak it and go and, you know, gives a Hindi abuse, and the generative AI returns with a Hindi abuse, it can go and return the Hindi abuse. So I think it is not possible, right? It is the same like human beings, that, you know, you have trained your employees not to abuse your customers, even if your customers are frustrating the life out of them, right? So, but some employee somewhere will abuse the customer. It's exactly same thing, that you can try to put as many rules as possible, but eventually that technology has a mind of its own, and in some error cases, in some cases where the jailbreak happens, it will actually miss the pod. It's not a deterministic technology.
Ankit, now shifting focus a little, could you also let us know how Synzy is positioning itself to assist financial services companies is navigating this very interesting and new terrain of generative AI?
Yeah, I think our focus is on helping banks build great digital experiences for their users and consumers. And that's our key focus and mission. And I think what we're trying to do is make GenAI pre-integrated into the stack so that our customers do not have to make extremely hard choices to say whether I should do this, whether I should do this, should I go and find this generative AI company or that generative AI company. I think what we are trying to do is make small things intelligent using GenAI. Like for example, the example that I can give is that when you are getting a user and you have some of his data, he's a new user, you have some of his data, you have their bank statement, you have some of their KYC, so hence you know their gender, you know their age, you know where they're located. You can recommend them an intelligent offer versus just saying that I have this deterministic model which takes your age and income, and this is your age and income. I have this permutation and combination of credit cards, and I'll give you the credit card basis your age and income. Rather than having a very deterministic model, at least what we are trying to do is find a more creative way to do it, where looking at historical data, etc., and then using this to A, offer you the right credit card, and second, offer you the right messaging. So let's say you are offering somebody a credit card, that credit card is a benefit of going to the movie, that credit card is a benefit of going to golf. So one is that you can choose to either list 50 things, which I think the banks end up doing, or what you can do is you can see, hey, this guy is high income, he's in 40s, 50s, lives in Bombay, and I have to choose between two things, which is golf and this. So I will say, hey, take this card and you can go golfing on the weekends. So rather than having a very deterministic model, these GenAI models, I think, are doing that job, that they're looking at your products and then choosing the right product first and then choosing the right message for that product. That is the part at least we are seeing where GenAI is really adding a lot of value. And as I said, the other parts which are on automation, traditional AI is still doing or has been doing a good job, and I think is on its march, and I don't see GenAI really taking over or anything. I think the traditional AI is anyways on its march, and I think is solving a lot of those problems.
Now, Ankit, Synzy is a well-known name in the financial services circle in the country. But even then, there are some listeners who sometimes are new to the fintech space or the financial services world also, or they're just new to the problem. So I think it would be really helpful for those people if you could just quickly talk about the services that Synzy offers. I know you spoke about that you create great digital experiences. But if you could just break that down as to what are the different problems that Cyanzy helps banks solve, I think that would really help.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for asking that question. So, yeah, absolutely. So I think when you're trying to create a great digital experience for either new consumers who are trying to onboard onto your bank for account, credit card or loan, or your current consumers who you're trying to cross-sell a loan or you're trying to offer them another product, you have to make sure that that customer in the minimum possible effort and minimum possible time gets to the product they want. And I think the problematic thing in BFSI, unlike an e-commerce, is that we have to make them go through hoops because there is risk and compliance and fraud. So we have to ask them for KYC, we have to do some underwriting, we have to get our document signed in a compliant manner. And then we have to set up, if we are giving a loan, we have to also set up an instrument to collect money. And I think what Cyanzy does is, one, we beautifully manage this under the hood so that our financial services partner doesn't have to do all of this effort to figure out what is the best way to do KYC, what is the best way to do underwriting, what is the best way to do e-sign, what is the best way to do collection setup. And once you come with, once you work with Cyanzy, it's like a single studio. I think of it as a creative studio concept that, you know, you come and work with Cyanzy and within weeks, you're live on this new digital experience where the customer gives you one data point and you pull a lot of the other data points. Customer gives you one document, things get pre-populated using OCR, fraud checks happen on the document. Backend, lot of databases get hit for fraud checks. And then if, depending on the loan, auto underwriting happens, this is your bank statement pulls, this is your vehicle data, etc. And so within very few clicks and steps, the consumer is able to get to his product. And I think the data points that we have is that in traditional journeys, at least in many cases, consumers are filling up to 40 form fields. And I think when we go in, that number comes down to 5 to 8. And within 5 to 8 data points, we are able to repopulate a lot of things and get the consumer to the same product in a faster way. And second, because a lot of this data has come from good data sources, there is lesser fraud. So you have better customer experience, you have lesser fraud, and you have faster turnaround. So you get your money faster and you get more customers, you get less dropouts. So that is what we do. That is our core of what we do. And I feel by transforming this digital experience, all three parties get benefited a lot. The risk and compliance, the business in the bank, and the customer.
Understood. And Ankit, do you have any stats on the improvement in TAT and cost savings that financial services company would have seen implementing Cyanzy over their traditional process or earlier processes?
Yeah, I think we have seen that cost ratio is that for every 1 rupee you spend, you save 9 rupees. So which means, you know, almost 80% cost saving compared to your traditional process. And in terms of tax, of course, it varies by product. But if I was to choose non-real products, right, non-real-time products, we have seen TATs on things like current account opening, which is a traditionally process which takes weeks, come down to 3 days. In fact, at one of the largest banks in the country, we have a 90% one-day TAT, which means 90% of the applications get processed in a day, where the average used to be 3 weeks. So I think technology, once it creates a change, at least the kind of technology we are talking about, it creates a change in a way, it builds a very 0-1 way of the world. And like this bank, for example, they used to have 3 weeks. Now their problem is why everything is not in the same day, right? So it changes your complete mindset. You're like, if 90% can happen, why the rest 10% takes more time? So it completely changes how you do things. It completely changes your way. Like, you have no, of course, paper has gone out of the banking system for a long time, but we still have TATs, we still have a lot of form and data being collected. Like, whenever I work with a bank, my problem is not that you have an app, but the fact your app is so dumb and it asks me for so many things, which it should not.
Ankit, this has been a very, very amazing conversation. Ankit, if listening to this, there are a few listeners or financial institutions who would like to reach out to you, what would be the best way to get in touch with you or Cyanzy's team?
Yeah, I mean, I am always open on LinkedIn, my email also, ankit@sciencey.com. You can always reach out to our website as well, sciencey.com.
Excellent, Ankit. I'll include those details in the show notes. Thanks once again for joining us today, Ankit.
Thank you, Hemant. Thank you, Arroyo. I think it was an extremely interesting conversation, and thank you so much for having me.
That's it from India FinTech Diaries this week. Do log on to our website, indiafintechdiaries.com, for show notes and other exclusive content. Until next time, stay safe.